Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Here we are.
What's up, dude?
How you doing? What do you want to start with? Jordan Peterson, Gad Sad, or Bachelor cancellations?
Jordan Peterson.
Okay. So Jordan Peterson was talking. This is a good warm up. Was talking to Gad Sad, and he asks Gad sincerely, because they're kind of talking about postmodernists. He says, is that what a postmodernist would believe? And it was just interesting for me in that moment to realize, I think both sides of any debate, and I don't know if this has always been the case in the world, but sort of imagine what they think someone would say. And sometimes they do it charitably and sometimes they do it completely in bad faith. But it's so interesting how rare it is for someone, even on YouTube, to get the opportunity to speak to someone who disagrees with them in good faith as they both pursue truth and remain open to changing their perspectives. And when two sides do speak to one another, it almost inevitably turns into a shouting match and a debate.
Sure.
And you get mired down in gunk that is so obviously immaterial to the pursuit of the truth with a capital T, or whatever it is.
Yeah. Or even when we do the opposite, which is when you speak, I think I just know you well enough that I assume everything you say is charitable. So I never assume that you're coming from a place of hate, because I know you don't. But then I don't ask you, oh, is that what a postmodernist would say? You just say it and I go interpret this as in the best possible way.
Yeah.
And then we carry on. So.
Yeah. So I didn't know anything from it. I was like, oh man, how nice would it be to have an actual postmodernist instead of going, is that what they would say? And I when I've listened to Jordan Peterson, some people think that it isn't the case that he misrepresents postmodernism. And I can see a handful of areas, but I also see him try to give credit where credit is due. And what he often says about postmodernism is that, you know, you're right. There's not necessarily an objective framework on which I can say that one moral thing is better than another. But it seems clear that when it comes to building a bridge, we cannot compare different types of engineering only because one bridge stands and the other bridge doesn't.
What is postmodernism?
Oh boy. So I wish we had a postmodernist here to help. I'll do my best. It's a large body of work, which I'm going to overly simplify here. But the general idea behind it is, I think, relativism. And one of the things that it's applied to, it's applied to culture, it's sometimes applied to mathematics and language, but it's the idea that if I say Britney Spears sucks and you're like, you know, obviously Bach is better than her, that is a very subjective statement that if we dig down into it, doesn't stand on anything fundamental. And even if you say, well, Britney Spears writes in 4/4 time and uses only the same three notes and Bach is much more complex.
Why is complex better?
Sure. Why is this better? Why? It's basically, if you ask why, in my interpretation of it, if you ask why a million times, you get to an axiom which stands on nothing, which is, I think complexity is better. Or I think, for instance, even that bridges that stand are better. You know what I mean? Like, I think that mathematics that accurately predict the position of celestial bodies is better or more useful. But that's not to say that it is the case. So one of the stories that Gad tells about a postmodernist is how he was saying, well, isn't it true that the sun rises in the east and sets in the west? And she, I think, fairly to a degree responds, well, who says what's east and who says what's west? Mm-hmm. He says, well, over there. And she says, what do you mean over there? And I think what postmodernists accurately point out is that the way that we divvy up the world, like there's a water bottle here and I see it as separate from the table on which it stands, is based on survival.
Well, yeah. To say the sun rises is inaccurate.
Exactly.
That's not fundamentally true. We rotate around the sun and it stays still.
And that's not even fundamentally true. So the point of the postmodernist is you can shift perspectives and see things very differently. If I were 1 trillion sizes larger than I am, separating this water bottle from this desk would make zero sense and not be the way it was perceived. And if I was the size of a neutrino, treating this water bottle as a singular thing would make no sense.
What's the point?
The point is to say, holy cow, we often refer to objective truth. And so I say, like, you know, you're schizophrenic and I'm not. Mm-hmm. And I go, you're seeing illusions. And their point is, I'm also seeing illusions, but they're just consensual. Mm-hmm. Not consensual. They're widely, there's a high consensus around them. And so that's the point. So when we say, for instance, some of the things they point out is we talk about primitive societies and we talk about, you know, right and wrong ways of doing things. So for instance, they point to cultural practices that we might like look down on. I don't know if they necessarily often point to this one, but say like what we would call female genital mutilation. And they would go, to judge that from your perspective, obviously you see it as bad. But if you shifted perspectives, the badness of it sort of can disappear.
Sure. Or it's weird to judge that, but then think that circumcision is completely normal. It's and, like, oh, that genital mutilation is bad, but this genital mutilation is good.
Eating cows is fine. If there's a Chinese person eating a dog or a rat, that's somehow weird or crazy. And so those are instances where it really stands out as so obvious.
Is it a philosophy that's basic tenet is to minimize judgment?
I don't know what you could say it was for, but and depending on who you talk about, this is what I think is valuable in it, is that it adds a degree of humility to any perspective, which I think is really valuable. And so what I think then comes out of it is you need to have hypothetical statements about the things that you say to be true. So it's like, look, if you're interested in what we agree is human flourishing, then you might not want to do genital mutilation.
Yeah, you know? If you want a bridge that cars can drive across, you're going to want to go with consensus mathematics.
Yes, yes. If you perceive this as a car and this as a bridge, and you know, which, come on, let's be real, bro. We should do math this way.
Yeah.
But that's not to say that this math is right or true or has an objective claim that
is
beyond
that. But it's definitely useful if you want to get across this river.
Yes. And that's the thing is like, I don't know how many postmodernists there are in torture chambers, you know, going like, well, my perspective says like suffering is real. Collapsing bridges are become very real when you're standing on them. So in any event, I wish I had a postmodernist here.
There's no such thing as genital mutilation works until somebody's mutilating your genitals. There is such a thing.
Exactly. So this is, I'm still, I'm not criticizing Peterson and Gad for it, but it's just unfortunate that it's so difficult to have open-minded conversations, because I'm sure that there's something that a postmodernist feels that they're misrepresenting. So another thing that this is applied to.
We have a bad debate culture, I feel like, on the internet, because changing your mind publicly is seen as a sign of weakness. You know, John Kerry flip-flopped. Sorry, you mean that after a decade plus of new information, I updated my mind to account for that? Like, I didn't just stick to what I thought in 1990? Yeah, that's a bad thing. Mm-hmm. And I think people see that. It's like, oh yeah, Ben Shapiro destroyed this kid because he had nothing to say. And instead he said, oh, that's a great point. Yeah. I'll have to think about it.
Yeah.
Just like, what? This is how dialogue is supposed to occur. We update our information and then change our minds. So we have made that a weakness, I feel like. Mm-hmm. You're almost better off shifting goalposts, changing the topic. So that's what you see. When you see Vosh and Destiny have a conversation, it's not occurring where anyone will change their mind, because to change your mind would be to admit defeat to the enemy. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And there might be times where they change their mind. But what I notice and in myself is your voice gets louder. One or both of you, not necessarily you, is probably starting to deviate from a pursuit of truth. if you find yourself having to shout. So just one other thing with postmodern, because I think this is one of the years where it first started and I find it very credible, is in the artistic realms. It says, who says this art is good? Who says this art is bad? That's where you get the MoMA, is it the Modern Museum of Modern Art, has like a red thing, and Duchamp put up a urinal. And
I think the Mona Lisa sucks. I do. It's considered a classic. I went and saw it. It sucks.
Yeah.
Like you won't convince me otherwise.
And the point is, you're not wrong in that. Now, where Jordan Peterson and Gad come in is they say, well, we have to agree that the brush strokes have certain qualities to them. And a more postmodern approach would say, says who?
Yeah.
You know, says who? Just who says what's a brushstroke? Who says that this is a lighter touch? You know, and there's I think something fair to that perspective of total relativism. The problem is, and this is what James Lindsay criticizes, is they say, look, they tear everything down, which is like fair enough. And then where the woke, according to James Lindsay, his perspective is then what is the only thing that is left is power. So then the only thing that remain is power as historically wielded by groups of people. Mm-hmm. So then you have marginalized groups and unmarginalized, and these things are real. You know, there's no blurry, I guess there are some blurry, you know, because there's intersectionality, but it's what is real in the world are these power games. And the only thing that we can do is even the power game as it has been historically wielded. I think a fair point to this is, well, who tells the story of what history is and how groups clump together?
I don't know if it's postmodernism, but the philosophy that I don't agree with is this idea that if anyone is in a better position than someone else, they got there by taking advantage of that person, because I feel like it doesn't allow for two people with free access to the gym and free access to food, but one just goes and works out every day and the other one chooses not to. And then in a year, that first person is significantly stronger than the second. It's like, was he stronger because he took advantage of the second person, or is he stronger because he went to the gym every day and ate right and the other person chose not to?
Sure.
And sometimes I think a power imbalance is caused by taking advantage of people, but it seems weird to say that any difference in strength or success or money or fame or whatever is only due to disadvantaging people and oppression. It just seems weird because you're not, like, surely we can think of examples where that's not the case.
Yes, I think that most postmodernists would agree with that statement. And then where you would disagree is on the particulars of where each one is happening in the world.
Well, funny enough, isn't the postmodern thing to say that, okay, well, let's say that movie stars have a massive amount of money relative to teachers, and that's bad. Well, the postmodernists, shouldn't they say, why do you think that's bad? Just because they have more money? Who's to say that having more money is inherently important?
Well, I think this is one of the difficulties of postmodernism, is that it is such a, it starts from such a skeptical place that it is tough to then construct off of that like airy edifice.
Yeah.
And so if you apply it to itself, it sort of does seem to eat its own tail, and there's perhaps an interesting way out of that problem. But yeah, I don't know, and I think the point that I started this was, it'd be nice to talk to someone who's
I've never heard this term before,
genuinely interested. Oh, you never heard of postmodernism?
No.
Oh my gosh, yeah, this is like all the rage. This is sort of what underpins a lot of the woke stuff, which if we want, we can now go into the what is it, the drama du jour.
let's fire away.
Well, I'm not interested actually in talking about the specifics of it, but it raises questions. So host of The Bachelor is a guy named Chris Harrison. I learned this week. And there was something like the first season where there was a black bachelor.
This is the first season where it's a black bachelor.
Yes. Yeah. And so race is top of mind for people. And there was a contestant who made it towards the end who was a woman. And there was photos of her at an Old South party in college, which I believe means that it was housed at what used to be a plantation. And they wore Old South style clothes and drank. And I don't think that there was any reenactments of slavery, as to my knowledge. And then in addition to that, there were a handful of other accusations, like she culturally appropriated one Halloween and stood next to a guy in a photo who was a black guy who was dressed as a slave. And like that this is, she was then under fire. And then the host said, hey, let's have some grace. And he said a handful of interesting things that we can jump off of. One is, okay, this is wrong in 2021, but was it wrong in 2018? Interesting question about moral relativism, which we can dive into. She was young, she was dumb, was 18. And anyway, what happened is, somewhere behind the scenes, he lost the job, maybe stepped down, and apologized and said he was wrong, and those statements effectively perpetuated racism.
Mm-hmm.
So without getting into the specifics of him, her, there's a handful of, I think, interesting questions, which is like...
Yeah, because I didn't watch the full interview, honestly. Mm-hmm. So I can't say if he said something inappropriate or not,
because
I didn't watch everything he said.
Sure.
So maybe he snuck in something crazy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I read some articles that summarized what he said.
Yeah.
But maybe he said some crazy shit that I didn't see.
This is so why this I like about, I like philosophy more than
this isn't about him.
Litigation.
This is about questions around
yes.
our understanding of some of the topics being raised.
Yes. So there's a handful of questions. They all tie together. So how do we know, well, what makes something wrong is, I guess, the first mm-hmm. question that this sort of does. So the perspective of the woman, the host opposite him that was kind of his foil in this, I think her name is Rachel Lindsay, was that he says, was this wrong in 2018 or is it wrong in 2021? And she says it was always wrong mm-hmm. To do this. And the idea being that her perspective is that slavery existed as an institution in America. It occurred in the South. It occurred on plantations in the South, and you can that to have a party at that place which makes light or celebrates the South is to celebrate the subjugation of Black people, which makes Black people upset, which makes it bad. Mm-hmm. And I actually think there's a handful of jumps in there that I don't follow necessarily that seem to construct the view that it's wrong. So the first one is that moments in history are tied to things that happened in that. So like, you know, Germany in the 40s is the Holocaust, or the South pre-Civil War is slavery. And what we were just talking about last night is like, so when a kid dresses up like a pirate, oh, dude. what is he doing?
I have such a long list of costumes.
Yeah, yeah.
I was thinking about this. If we want the rule to be that you cannot dress up as anything from history, that's our 2021 rule.
It's not history. It's where in a surrounding that. And here's the other thing.
Go ahead. Say what you're going to say.
I'm trying to.
Go ahead.
Just okay. It's not anything in history. It's at a time in history where something really bad was happening.
That's everything in history. Yeah. Okay. That's everything in history.
Yeah, yeah.
You go ahead with that caveat. So no, seriously though. So like, we can have a rule saying, okay, in 2021 going forward, we've all decided we're banning historical costumes. We get together and we know if you dress up as anything in history starting in 2021, you get canceled. But if it's that you dressed up as something in the past, like Vikings, massive rapists, pirates, slave traders and rapists, Egyptian pharaohs, Jasmine and Aladdin, they had slaves. The yeah. sultans had slaves.
Well, Jasmine and Aladdin never really existed. They were in Agrabah, which I don't...
Slaves, bro. Almost positive.
Okay. Probably in most places in human history.
Spartans from 300. Rape, murder, slavery. So,
the Greeks that did have slaves, I believe. Certainly the Romans. We dress up as gladiators. Do you know what a gladiator is?
It's a slave.
It's a slave who we gathered around and cheered while they murdered each other. I mean, and so if you say that your favorite movie is Gladiator...
Mm-hmm. It's pro-slavery.
Yeah, yeah, and because it or does it and who says if the tone of Gladiator is sufficiently negative towards the practice of slavery, or if it glorifies?
Well, I'm just saying in terms of costumes. If we're gonna go, if the rule is you can't dress up in a time period or as a person that was participating in a time period where atrocities occurred, don't dress up as anything from any time in history. Limit yourself to Mario and Luigi. You know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. I think people maybe don't realize that every historical costume can be tied to atrocity, slavery, murder, mm-hmm. rape, conquest.
Well, Mario and Luigi, I mean, if I also perpetuates the idea that princesses need saving, that women are incapable of protecting themselves as
sure,
they get.
If you dress up as a priest and I was molested as a priest as a kid, maybe your costume gives me PTSD.
Now, let me say, so what you're now adding the second layer, which is postmodernists, I think, would accurately say that, look, there's not one view of history. There are stories that we tell about history. So one person says, like, look, the Catholic Church has a long history. They built some stuff. They started some wars. They defended some people. They gave people hope. Like they you know, and some priests molested some kids, and some priests donated all their time and money to charity.
To me, priest costume. Molestation.
Exactly. So here's the question. Who gets to say, and we act like it's
obvious. That's not actually how I feel for the record. Just pointing out an argument.
So we have acted, I think, sort of culturally around this issue of the South as if the South is singularly defined as slavery because it was so much. But I would suggest the postmodernist view that there's a lot of stories that one can tell about the South. Certainly one of them is that, but there is no right interpretation here. So what we have
I guess I'm just saying is you can just apply this to other things. You could take this and paint almost any costume with it. It would be tough to find one that's not.
Yes. So what you accurately, I think, have said is that this actually isn't about the truth of history, because there is no truth of history. There are perspectives on history, and maybe we agree on the base level facts, but not on what is predominant in a society or what it says.
Yeah. So and then, by the way, we can have that rule if we want to. Like, you just got to dress up as Superman going forward. But anyone who's ever dressed up as anything from any past history would be canceled using this rule.
But furthermore, it's also guilt by association, because she stood next to someone. This is one that I don't even want to get deep into. If you stand next to someone in a picture, that to me is just so boring. Throw it out. I don't care. Like,
well, we talked about this though. When you're canceling someone, the more instances you can point to, the stronger the case. So, you know, when someone's canceling Brian Cowan, he was accused of date raping someone. That's a
serious allegation.
He was accused of saying something, and then he was accused of, I forget what else, but they certainly, even if you think all three behaviors were bad, they aren't all equal. They aren't all date raping someone. Mm-hmm. But when you're writing the article, it's just easier to say there have been four accusations
of sexual misconduct. And so then the first one is the date rape.
So for this girl, similarly, it's like there's a history of racist action. One is going to a plantation party. One is standing next to a black man who's decided to dress up like a slave for their own reasons.
And the other, you know, and then her high school friends or people at her high school said, you know, the rumors. And those, as you, this is something that I think it was Scott Adams who points out that, though many people have, you just, and when you add to a list, things feel more credible. Like
you just glaze over, and
you glaze over, and you don't need to evaluate each piece of evidence on its own. And just, I dismiss that. And you're left with one accusation or two accusations. So yeah, boring to me. The second thing that you've brought up is clearly there's something else going on here, which is who feels upset and offended, who, how many, when, and all of that sort of stuff. So I imagine that the amount of people who feel upset and offended by pirates is non-zero but small in 2021. Let's assume that that number dramatically increases, or at least that the people who are small band together and make a lot of noise.
Yeah, let's just say that there's an influx of people in the US that are terribly affected by Somalian pirates, and they, even though the costumes are wildly different, just the pirates in general, they find incredibly offensive that you would ever minimize how harmful they can
be. Here's the question, then we can apply it back to this one. Is
so it's 2030.
So it's 2030.
There's a bunch of people, and they think that pirates and piracy are not to be trivialized.
You know what? To make this as comparable as possible, let's say gladiators. I know pirates dealt in slave trade as well, but let's go like undeniable. Maybe there was one voluntary gladiator. Like these are slaves that were forced to fight to the death. Brutal, right? That things related to gladiators, and because they have a history of maybe they're gypsies or Roma. I don't know even what the correct term is these days, who lived in around the times. We can trace their ancestry back to one surviving gladiator, and they never broke the cycle of poverty or whatever it is. And they're deeply upset by depictions of gladiators. And that group gains enough power or becomes recognized. So we're sitting in 2030, and we're looking back at the time where I actually never dressed up as a gladiator, but let's pretend that I dressed up as a gladiator, and we're going, do I say I was young and stupid? Is that the correct? So I'm saying, like, I don't want to offend anybody. Is it appropriate for me at that point to first apologize and say I'm sorry? Second, say I was stupid at the time, or something else. And I think as I've thought through this, the apology is based on what you feel is the sincerity of the person's upsetness, but also like the amount of people saying it. So if you're at a comedy club and you piss off one person as a comedian and you apologize, you should just quit. You can't interact in the world if your baseline is there's one person upset. It has to hit some sort of critical threshold. Unfortunately,
Bill Burr talks about this. He'll go to create a comedic bit, and the process requires missing.
Yeah.
And not being funny or missing and pissing people off. And that's how he learns what people will laugh at, what people won't. And the people he pisses off in the first time, if they were to come back, that exact same demographic is laughing in the 30th time. But yeah, if he has to stop the bit and apologize every time he pisses someone off, or kill a bit anytime he pisses someone off, he'll have nothing to say.
So this is my question. Let's start with sorry. When does one say sorry? Because I've said stuff I can think in the past that I didn't mean to be offensive and I didn't know was upsetting to someone, and I upset them and I've said sorry and I've meant it. And there's probably also been times when I've said shit, and I know I asked you to do this with my ex-girlfriend, where you upset her you didn't feel sorry about it. I was like, can you just fucking say it to make this problem go away from me?
I said, I'm sorry that you're feeling upset. You can't. I think
I agree with you.
Apologize about doing something if you don't regret it. So what I did in that case with her is I said, listen, I didn't mean to upset you. It wasn't my goal. Mm-hmm. I felt uncomfortable because you guys had just broken up. I didn't want to talk to you, but I am sorry that you feel upset.
Yes.
Like that wasn't the goal.
But what you're saying is I do not regret the behavior that I chose. Like I don't look back on that and go, that was the incorrect thing to do in the circumstance.
No, I mean, that was just how how could I not have reacted that way? I didn't want, you and her just broken up. She came up to say hi. Didn't want to talk to her. I was pleasant with her. And she was upset that I didn't want to hang out with her or talk to her more because we weren't friends.
So I'm eventually going to apply this back to The Bachelor. But okay, so in the future, let's just give it the strongest case. A ton of people are upset by gladiators. Mm-hmm. You've got a photo of you dressed as a gladiator in 2015, mm-hmm. back in whatever, some Halloween. And they're furious and demanding. Do you use the word sorry?
I think you can say, I'm sorry that you all are offended by this. It wasn't my intention to be offensive when mm-hmm. I wore the costume.
Yeah. Now, people will, at least in today's climate, clearly find that insufficient because one of the things that I'm seeing in this is that victory, weirdly enough, the public sentiment in this thing is, as I have scientifically evidenced in the Instagram comments on the one post on E! News, are very much, he said he's sorry, let it go. Oh my God, this is ridiculous. There seems to be, if you acquiesce and say sorry for these types of things, there is a release by most of the people. I'm not saying that should motivate you.
I wonder what the reaction would have been without the apology though. I wonder if those same people, if he had said, I'm not, mm-hmm. I don't know what he said, but let's say that he didn't say anything bad, mm-hmm. hypothetically, and he doesn't regret it because he didn't say anything bad. I think if he had come out and said, I don't even know what I would apologize for, I didn't say anything bad. Mm-hmm. I think those comments would just say, he didn't say anything bad, bring him back, don't fire him.
Maybe.
I suspect this because I went to there's one petition, maybe there's a bigger one, that is 40,000 signatures to get him fired, which is a very small number relative to the amount of fans for The Bachelor. Mm-hmm. So he might just have fans who are saying he's sorry, he apologized, let him back on. But if he hadn't apologized, they'd say he didn't do anything wrong, let him back on. Got I'm it. Not saying they were persuaded by the apology.
So I'm saying what's interesting is that the experience of this girl who went to this party, and just to adjust this metaphor.
Well, she got death threats, right? Her family got death threats.
Sure, sure. But I'm saying this is very much like, imagine today that as an American or whatever, you dressed up as a centurion, or I guess more particularly a gladiator at one point. And you didn't know it, but there's, you kind of knew that gladiators were slaves. I mean, come on, you kind of knew, but you didn't know that there's a huge group of Italians, millions of Italians today and 10 years ago and 20 years ago, who are deeply upset and offended by that ancestry. You just are, it doesn't occur to you. Like you kind of sense it out there in the world, but it doesn't occur to you. I suspect that's very much what this girl experienced at this party, which was, I'm invited to a party. I want to go drink. I'm going to go put on a big hat. I'm going to dress up, and thought nothing of slavery. Now we can argue, and someone who does think about that will say, well, you should have. Mm-hmm. To you, I ask, do you think of gladiator slavery? Like, you know, are you keenly aware of all of the pockets of people around the world that are upset, rightfully, historically justified by all the things that they would be? And have you carefully avoided ever doing anything that would tread on what a sizable group finds is deeply disturbing?
Yeah, this is the other thing that I find. I just find it interesting. I don't really have a takeaway, but I would question how much of the people. So there's a group of people who are offended by the fact that she went to a plantation party because they think that it's a tacit endorsement of slavery.
Yeah.
Which is wrong. And I would just wonder how many of them are wearing clothes made by slaves or child laborers, using technology made by either slavery or child labor, wearing a blood diamond. You know what I mean? So it's interesting to me. Like, are we trying to fight against slavery? And we're trying to minimize slavery and the suffering of slavery. And that includes slavery that occurred 400 years ago and slavery today. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It doesn't seem like it to me, but
I can't tell you what any one of those, that's my sense of it, is that there are more effective ways to stop suffering as it relates to slavery than by becoming very upset and Chris Harrison getting fired for defending this person. But yeah, again, I don't want to drift into the specifics.
Not trying to minimize, but I'm just saying that seems odd to me. It seems odd to me that if this would offend you, but you are not
responsibly
sourcing your clothes, your tech, your this, your that. It seems like then you only care about the slavery that occurred to people that look like you. And you might even have a blood diamond, weirdly enough.
Yeah.
Which is from black people who are getting their lives are destroyed by this blood diamond industry. Mm-hmm. And you might be wearing a blood diamond mad at this person who went to a costume party in 2018.
Yes.
And that just seems interesting to me.
Yeah. So there's two, one thing, just I felt this way about Logan Paul's Suicide Forest thing, which was there was so much outcry about how awful it was. And so little it seemed in the event of like, why did this person kill themselves? Mm-hmm. What is going on? Like, is there a type of culture out there that we can sort of mitigate? Like,
people were telling Logan Paul to kill himself.
Some people.
But I want to know, like, for that person who's like, Logan, you should kill yourself. It's like, wait, you think he minimized the impact of suicide because he didn't make the person commit suicide. He wasn't mm-hmm. a catalyst for it. He wasn't the bully that made that person commit suicide or the boss that bullied him. He found an already dead person. And I'm not saying this is good, but then someone went, you should kill yourself. It's like, well, who here is minimizing suicide or who here is not taking suicide?
Well, that's, again, I think you are taking the most extreme response. I'm even more interested in the ones that are like, he's a bad guy for that. And it's like, okay, very easy to do. Are you helping? Mm-hmm. You know, where's the help? And what I said we've talked about this to my family is like, look, if you want to talk about this, you have to donate $5 to any suicide prevention charity. And then we can talk about what a bad guy he is. That is the cost of admission to shitting on him right now. Yeah. People won't do it. They won't donate $5. It's like, okay, next topic. I'm done with this. I think you're right is that we don't seem to be focused on, helping. And I find as myself, as I'm interested in the like, okay, what makes this wrong? Yada, yada, yada. But it certainly takes me away from how's our charity water campaign doing? You know what I mean? Like, could we do a better call to action? Could we do all these sorts of things? So
doing pretty well. Side note. Not killing it, but per view.
Just a video
that no one wanted to watch.
Yeah.
Per view, we're doing okay.
Good.
Actually, we should probably link to it. It's a different URL. People are interested in donating to charity water to get water to people who don't have access to it. Yeah, you can go to a link that's in the description of this YouTube video.
Yep.
It's our favorite charity. We fundraise for it every year. And we're going to match the first $100,000 that gets donated. So if you donate $20, we'll match. And that gets someone clean water for 10 years who otherwise wouldn't have had access mm-hmm. to it.
And we will have photos. We've been donating for years now. And it takes years to build the wells. So we have some of our first ones. And those mm-hmm. are some of the smaller projects that we did. But we have larger sums of money, which should get us more photos.
Yep. And at some point, we'll go and we'll be there at one of the wells that you guys helped us to dig. But those trips
we didn't dig
canceled.
It.
Helped us to fund. But they've canceled the trips for now because of COVID. They don't want people going across continents. But it's in the works for 2022.
Yes.
So you'll get to see us at a well that you guys helped fund. So we'll put that link in the description in the YouTube video.
Yes. So anyway, you were mentioning there was another angle on this that people don't seem interested in help. And I tend to agree with that assessment. But also I want to take the other side, which is that like clearly there's things in I say like you should have known better. You should have. It's just the idea of ignorance being an excuse sometimes, but not always. Is interesting to me.
Well, I mean, I do think case by case judgment is important.
Okay, who's making the judgment? That's sure. The question. So one of the things like I think part of what's happening is here is like, say that you're a black person who is sincerely and deeply offended by this. It's because and I don't mean that they're false when I call them stories, but the stories that you've heard about America and the South and this, you did not get 150 years of life by across millions of people downloaded into your brain. You received a sliver of that. And that sliver represents your understanding of what it means. And that's your understanding of what it means. To a white person, it means something very differently. Now, what the, I think, progressive woke thing is to say, if you're a marginalized group, your perspective on it takes precedence. And there are phrases like, it's not the intent, it's the impact, which is, I think, you know, sometimes in my personal relationships, I take that to heart and I go, oh shit, like I didn't mean it like that, but it was received like that. I think in public discourse where it quickly devolves to taking the most offense becomes the position of utmost power. right? Like I truly believe there are people that are absolutely sincerely offended without needing or trying or clamoring for social media clout mm-hmm. about this. But dangerously, when it becomes, it's not the intent, it's the impact. It's, you just get, you can get, and I see it in this, clout chasers who want to be the most offended mm-hmm. by it because it allows them to advance career goals or even just get likes or 5 minutes of attention. The other thing, there was another angle on this, which is that there was this woman who attended the party and there was Chris Harrison who said, basically, let's have some grace for her. And I think it's...
I don't know. He said a lot of things, sure. Honestly. I've seen articles quote him all sorts of ways. And so I have no idea what he said.
Is it crazy for me to say that one should be able to call for grace, clemency, and moral relativism? Not should. That I believe, like, for anyone, if whether that person is a serial killer or a, like...
Might not be what they're upset about. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm saying. There was a 30-minute conversation. It might not have been where they said, where he said... Let's have grace. Mm-hmm. Might have been any of the other sentences he said.
Sure.
Over 30 minutes.
All right. So I won't go into the specifics of him because I don't know them in detail. Anything else on that? Just, yeah, we talked about when it's okay, when you should say sorry. What about the stupid thing? Like, this is my other question. If you today are unaware of, let's this hypothetical 10 plus million strong Italians who are deeply upset by gladiator references. Mm-hmm. And you learn about it in the future, do you have to look back on today and say, I was young and stupid? Is that...
I think it just depends how you actually feel.
Well, I think we're being sort of corralled by, like, even the responses that I've seen sort of defending him. And again, I don't want to get into the specifics. I'm interested in the ideas behind it. Mm-hmm. Are stupid, forgive. And I even question that. I go, I guess we can all just say that everything that we are ignorant of in the world and makes us stupid. But then I guess we just have to say, look, if I was young and stupid then, I remain equally stupid sure. today and will forever because I can never understand everyone's response to anything in the world forever, which is okay if that's what we're going to say.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think that
that's how we use stupid.
I do think the most accurate term is ignorant in the sense that I think that people who eat from slaughterhouses are ignorant of what occurs in them. I don't mean that pejoratively. I mean, if they were to sit in a slaughterhouse, they would not be able to eat the meat that came from it simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And when you are wearing a blood diamond, you are ignorant of how the diamond was sourced, yeah. which I think means if you had to go to Africa and be amongst the people mining the diamonds, you would take your diamond off.
Yeah.
And if you had to go, I don't know where, but to somewhere in Asia where your tech was made to see people in horrible living conditions making it, you may stop making the purchases. So I do think a lot of this stuff comes from ignorance. And I don't mean that in the sense that you're stupid and worse than the average person, which is how we use ignorant as an insult. But I think it's, this comes from not understanding the situation fully. And so, so maybe this is one of those where it's like, yeah, this happened out of ignorance in the sense that I had no idea going to this party would hurt 50,000 people or 500,000 people. If that's mm-hmm. what actually occurred, if me going to this party, becoming a public figure on a show, caused genuine hurt in 500,000 people. I was ignorant to that fact. Mm-hmm. I think that's the most accurate description.
Yeah, perhaps not stupid, but ignorant. Yeah.
If we had no ignorance, so many less tragedies were occurred.
I don't think there could be any. And what you're, you, what interestingly.
Dude, the Uyghur concentration camps just march on. No one knows what's happening. If we all had to, if every time you had log on Instagram, they showed you 10 minutes of Uyghur concentration camps first, that was the fee for logging in. People would be taking more action. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think everything is ignorance. That's how we allow slaughterhouses, concentration camps, child labor, blood diamonds, is we just don't investigate it. And people actually don't. I've tried to show people the movie Blood Diamond or tried to show people videos of, like, it's people like their ignorance in that sense until there's a social consequence.
So I think that what's interesting is that in all of the examples you said you had to go there. You know, you have to go there because clearly one can know something mm-hmm. and remain ignorant, which is to say, like, we all know.
No, they're vague ideas to people. Vague yes. ideas. Blood Diamond. Oh, I that's a Leonardo DiCaprio
movie. Yeah, we've all heard these things.
Yeah. People might not have even seen the movie, let alone the real suffering, right?
So the opposite of ignorance would appear to be something like empathy, which is a shared feeling, not a knowing. Like, yes, there is a country in Africa. And yes, X million people die producing these things.
No, it's going and watching an African person die getting a diamond or watching an animal tortured at a slaughterhouse, or watching however the cobalt gets mined for your iPhone, like being there while kids are whatever, you know, whatever the situation is. Yeah, that seeing it in touching range, I think would give you an undeniable empathy. I think you would, unless you're a sociopath, you would struggle not to have it, at which point people would just stop.
Yeah.
Getting the clothes or the phone or the meat or whatever it is.
And I think the one, this is one of the things that one of the problems that I guess I have with the woke elevation of, what are they called? Historically oppressed groups, is that the woke perspective is that the historically oppressed group inherently understands the world of the quote unquote oppressor and such, that does not need to start from a potential place of ignorance as to what somebody intended meant, they're all of that sort of stuff, that's just built into the fabric. And I would say that not just groups, like, this is the other thing that I don't like about it, is that it groups people into lumps of the skin color, sex, all that kind of things. And I think they were way more interesting as individuals. And that's more useful.
Yeah. But you even talk about oppressor as if every white person was here during the slave era, as if there weren't, like, if you're a white person and you came over from another place, your family came over in the 1900s, what do you have to do with slave labor oppression in Civil War era America?
Sure. And we've talked about this before, but like the tracing it through the lineages and all that kind of stuff, how like the idea that whiteness as a thing is the thing. And,
well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying treating races as a monolith is very odd to me.
Sure. But again, I would like to talk to someone who doesn't agree with all of this, but the general idea that we're saying, he who understands all forgives all, and also it acts more compassionately towards other people, is like, I think that's a good thing for anybody, regardless of where you think you fit on the historical totem pole of oppression, to try to do, even towards the oppressors, which is like, this is the difficult thing. We all like Nazi Germans, as if they are some different species of human.
Well, I've said this. I feel like I can say this risklessly because I'm Jewish, but 99% of people, if they were born in Nazi Germany, would be Nazis.
Well, whatever percentage were,
sure,
would be.
Sure. Yes. And maybe you would be a soldier. Maybe you'd be the guy manufacturing the guns. Very few people hid Jews in the attic.
Yeah.
And like, whatever percentage of the population of Germany hid Jews in the attic, roll a dice with 100 sides. And if it comes up higher than that number, it wasn't you.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. And everybody, and if you think that's not true and that you're disproportionately, you better be doing something today that is absolutely life-threateningly selfless.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, it wouldn't be you. Mm-hmm. You know? So like, okay, how can I demonize every single person who was alive in Germany in that era when I know that every person that I know, if transported there, roll the dice, 70% of them, 30% of some percentage of them are Nazis. You know what I mean?
Well, it gets harder. It gets harder and harder as you go, okay, well, not everybody in Germany, but just the SS. And you go, okay, maybe not all the SS, but just the ones that were mean about it. And as you play this game further and further, and
some Nazis were evil. Yeah, I'm not.
No, I think this is the spiritual, like the only final resting place is if you understood the life of the most of, what is his name, Joseph Menegle, or like whatever the fuck, you would have, not to say that you would endorse what he did or allow him to continue, but that you would have the same level of empathy and understanding and potentially even forgiveness if you deeply understood. That's not to say you would be complicit, allow, or you might put a bullet in his head. You still might deem that the best way to do it. But I think that's sort of where the inevitable conclusion of understanding is you can't stop it. Oh, but then there's the actual demons. It's like, no, like you get in the head of every demon and every psychopath.
Yeah,
we've
talked about this. That doesn't mean you can't put someone in jail
death. Could lock them up. You probably don't torture them, but you could end them, I think, pretty reasonably. So in any event, we talked about a lot of stuff there.
Yeah.
Very good. What do you got?
Well, we talked about this a little bit. You mentioned it. Logan Paul's moving to Puerto Rico for tax evasion. Sorry, to lower his taxes. It's not actually tax evasion. But I was so shocked by that because he's so rich already. I was just curious. I'd love to know, like, at what point do you pick it? And he says that he picks Puerto Rico because he fell in love with it on a trip. But then later in the video, he says the number one reason is taxes. Yeah. If the taxes there were as high as California, I wouldn't go to Puerto Rico.
Of course not.
Yeah. So it's like, how much money does one need before they make decisions based on happiness and not further wealth accrual? I was really surprised to see. I mean, I think he makes 8 figures a year. It's like,
oh, yeah.
If he were going to Hawaii or something, I would understand. Or if he said, this has nothing to do with taxes. I might be skeptical.
I just want
to
learn Spanish and I like the Caribbean. I'm going,
the number one reason is taxes. I'm like, man, how much is enough? Yeah. At what point do you not mind that you're only getting $5 million cash after taxes a year?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
100%. I mean, dude, I noticed it in my own life. If it's not enough today, after you're surviving and paying rent and not wondering where your next meal will come from. If it's not enough then.
Studies say like 50 grand a year or 70 grand a year.
70, but even that, like if it's not enough then, it's never, ever, ever going to be enough. And I wish, he seems like a smart guy. So I genuinely like to talk to him. And I think I could get him to recognize that you are focusing on the money that's being taken from you and not the money that you have. And that's a miserable way to live. You're so concerned that you could have had this, that you can't see what you do have. And as long as you live like that, you will be miserable.
Which isn't say to stay in LA necessarily.
No.
It's just to say, don't pick your next city with the primary motive being the least amount of taxes.
The truth is you could, yeah, he's just going to have more. You could double your business. You could like, what will you have? What will you like? What do you have today? I understand the feeling of taxes, which is I could have this much. The other thing is, I was like, look, maybe he's taking a principled stand. I was being charitable. Principled stand against the U.S. government. He doesn't like the way that we spend our taxes. Fine. But if you move to Puerto Rico, you should still, as Logan Paul, in my opinion, donate at least 40% of your income, at least, to charities of your choice. You don't like the U.S. war machine. You don't like whatever. Fine. But to take all that, I mean, I don't actually have any distaste, but I would like to say this to him and other people and myself who think about it, like you have an obligation, my man. Not only is there this personal, you'll be happier if you focus on what you have, but by God, you drove on public roads and like, you know, you lived in a nation with borders and police and rule of law and courts and all of this shit. And now that you got the bag, you're going to bail. And is this from a perspective that you built it all yourself because you made these videos on top of an internet infrastructure that was largely funded by like the government?
Well, I don't even know if he would say that or not. He might just be like, I don't care. I'm just trying to get my money.
Yeah, dude, you got to go hang out with some poor folks. And maybe Puerto Rico, hopefully you don't get a mansion that completely isolates you from the suffering of other people. But my God, for your own sake and for the sake of the world, like this is selfish at a way that is not good for anybody.
Yeah, I was more just, I mean, that mostly... It is surprising to me because I think you mentioned this in text. Let's say he doesn't want to go there except for the taxes, right? So he's moving there to minimize his taxes. I understand that his tax burden is higher than people who are middle class, but people who are middle class feel comfortable enough with their monetary situation to pick a city that they want to live in. And the fact that he has more is being translated into losing more to the government, which means he's going to go to a place he doesn't want to live.
Yeah.
That seems like the exact opposite of what you would think. You'd think, hey, I'm getting all the money. Where's the place I want to live most in the world?
Yeah, man.
Absent money. Is it Hawaii? Is it New York? Is it Florida? Is it, like, that's where you should be going because you already make millions of dollars after taxes. You did it. You won the game. You know what I mean?
It's funny to be locked into Puerto Rico because of your income. It's like there are people make less money than you and pick where they go. And you have so much money that you can't live in Puerto Rico.
The freedom, which is the ultimate currency.
Yeah, that's funny.
They have the freedom to live wherever they want.
You have to go to Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
Isn't that strange? The dragon. Dude, it's the dragon that can't leave his hoard. He has so much.
Yeah,
He grows so big that he can't leave his hoard.
And none of this is a knock on Logan. I think he gets a bad rap. He seems like a smart guy. I'm impressed with what he's built.
Positive regard for him.
It's more this. I'm just, if that's the number one reason to move, it is quite surprising.
You got to do, in my opinion, some psychedelics.
He's done it. That's the funny thing. He's done it.
You need to do them like now.
Different setting.
And you got to do it in a different setting without your buddies. And you still might move. You still might be like, you know, it's time for a change.
Yeah.
But you will not do it based on tax.
No, and I think he's just going to bounce, get the Mayweather check, and then come back. But the truth is, this guy's got a decade plus of making $10 million a year. This Mayweather thing, it's not some special thing that he can't redo. He's been doing it for years. He will do it for years. This dude's going to be a mogul who makes himself 7 or 8 figures a year for the foreseeable future. So if he doesn't want to live in a place, then moving there for taxes for any bag, even if it's a Mayweather bag, just doesn't matter.
Yeah,
just go live your life and make more money.
But I do want to just emphasize, like, because I've thought about this. We live in California. We are planning on it for the foreseeable future. We pay the highest tax rate of anyone I know, and I include people way richer than me because they got way loopholes than me. I actually don't think I can. I don't think I can find someone who pays a higher tax rate.
Not good
than I
at finding tax loopholes.
And I understand the feeling of, like, I want my tax rates to be this high or higher, and I want to, like, see improvements in homelessness. And I want to, like, it's frustrating to
California
feel like.
How California spends their money is bonkers.
So as a vote against the way that they've spent their money, I've considered, like, I'm getting out of here. Like, I don't vote for the way that this is being allocated.
Sorry, I don't think it's a bad call for him to leave LA or leave California. I'm surprised that he's going to Puerto Rico, given that he said the number one motive was money.
And suspicious that he's not going to turn around and donate a ton to charity.
Yeah, if he'd said he just always wanted to live in Latin America or something, and he was going to
Believe it. I wouldn't believe it if he said that he was moving alone to Puerto Rico.
Yeah,
that then I at least have least credit him for saying the truth. Those of you who don't know, you don't pay taxes in Puerto Rico. I believe there's no federal income tax. Yeah, is that correct? And probably what he'll do is stay 6 months and a day, and then fly home, and then flight for Mayweather and make a ton of $1 million. And it'll be fine. It'll be 6 months. But the general point is, if you don't have enough today, and I'm there, Logan is certainly there, you'll never have it. You will always be focused on what has been taken from you, what you don't have, and you will be poor. Like, the point of wealth is freedom.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing I took from it is that the person who just moves to their dream city, because it's their dream city, that person has more freedom wealth than the person that moves somewhere to avoid taxes.
I felt this, and I don't know that I've backtracked. There was a moment where I was planning on leaving my job. I said I couldn't leave, and one of our good friends, Paul, was like, just leave. And I became wealthy in that moment. I was like, I can go anywhere. And I felt rich, and I slept on your floor, didn't pay rent. You know what I mean? Ate 3 protein bars a day.
Yep.
And now, yes, could I have had more freedom to eat different food? Sure, I didn't have that, but I could go where I wanted
to go. Any flavor of protein bar.
Any flavor, baby. I thought that was good for me at the time. It was not. but yeah, I was free. And then we went to Brazil, and I had to Airbnb my room, but I was free to be in Brazil. And man, I want that for him. I want him to feel freedom. I want that for more people. And it's just a bummer to get so focused on.
It was funny too. He said one of the reasons he didn't want to leave. And again, I'm really not bagging the guy. I really do think that he's smart, and it's just interesting to hear him talk. But he said one of the reasons he didn't want to leave is because they just made a new $60,000 studio for the podcast. It's like, that's not a good reason to stay.
So one of the other things is we had to deal with is sunk costs.
Yeah.
You're like, oh my gosh, like I just paid down this house, or I just paid down this, and we
dude, how about this sunk cost? I just spent 4 years in finance getting to the highest paying
sleeping under my desk.
I was 2 years investment banking, 2 years private equity. People were like, dude, just stay another 2 years. Your hours are going to go down, and your pay is going to go up by like 30%. Like, you just paid your dues. And I was like, well, yeah, but then I have to stay here. I can't be in Brazil starting a business. And people did not understand that sunk cost. They're like, you've done the worst part, so now it makes sense to stay. It's like, no, in 2013, where do I want to be? Here doing finance, or in Brazil starting a business with 5 friends? That's where I want to be. So the fact that I put this time into it is meaningless.
Yeah. If this is interesting to you, read the 4-Hour Work Week. Again, we don't need to pat ourselves on the back. I am proud that we made those decisions. But the point is, I think for more people to make those decisions.
Also, we're not, just to humble ourselves, we're not particularly clever here. It's 4-Hour Work Week. And then I would also say there's a book, Predictably Irrational, which talks about sunk cost and free and all that jazz. But those are the goodies.
Hard tangents?
Sure. I have one that we've talked about a little bit.
Go for it.
Just about empathy. WandaVision. Spoilers if people haven't seen WandaVision.
Spoilers for WandaVision up to episode 6?
Whatever's live now.
6. No, because 7 goes up tonight. Episode 6.
Okay, sure.
We're a day in advance. Go ahead.
Episode 6. It's really interesting to me. It's really hammered home how easily...
Sorry, one thing. Those of you who want to keep watching, just click the next timestamp in the description on YouTube. Go for it.
How easily we are manipulated into who is the good guy and who is the bad guy. And so I think at some point the show will change and we'll find out that people are actually evil or not evil. But Wanda is, at this point, holding a town of thousands of people hostage, and they are clearly psychologically tormented. When they're free from it, they cry or they scream. She's still the protagonist. And there's a general who doesn't like her and wants to kill her, who is the bad guy because he says grumpy things, is a little bit gruff, scowls a lot. Meanwhile, for context, he watched half of the population of the world get killed last time a superpowered being went evil, right? And it, to me, it's just fascinating because I do find myself falling for the same trick of somehow I'm rooting for Wanda to get her happy ending. And I don't like the general. And it's fascinating. It's just who the camera is on and whose backstory you know. And if we had the exact same story occurring, but there had been a movie that followed this general's backstory as he dealt with Thanos killing half the population, and we knew nothing about Wanda's backstory with her brother or Vision or anything, we would all be rooting for them to take down the super terrorist that is Wanda.
Yeah.
And we'd be rooting so hard for this general who, with no superpowers, survived the blip, carried on with the sword organization. And yeah, it's just fascinating. It's like, wow, who you know the backstory of is who you root for and have empathy for. And who the camera follows is who you root for and have empathy for. And it's just interesting to me to think about, because if you just had them laid out on paper, you wouldn't be rooting for Wanda at all.
I suspect that Disney's going to find a plot way to, what's the word?
Make the general a bad guy.
To make the general a bad guy and abdicate Wanda, like it won't have been her fault somehow.
Yeah, I agree.
Like that it will not actually be an interesting take on, holy shit, she like consciously or unconsciously really hurts people. It's gonna be like, no, like there was an evil being who infected her. You know, like
I agree. But we just don't know that yet. So it's interesting who you root for.
Well, what I know about TV is that take Game of Thrones, for instance. Again, some spoilers in Game of Thrones, that's now happened. Tyrion goes pretty dark in the books, like becomes a tough guy to read and watch he's had everything taken from him. His whole life he's been mocked, and then he has his nose sliced off, and he doesn't get his nose sliced off in the thing.
They keep him relatively handsome.
Yeah, and he's misshapen in a way that Peter Dinklage is not.
Yep.
Like, so, and then Peter Dinklage gets like funny and drunk, and the Tyrion of the books becomes a human hater.
Misanthrope?
Misanthrope. That's the one.
Wasn't he also like pretty brutal to people?
He like rapes a prostitute at one point, and it's he becomes tough to root for. And I just know the TV shows won't do that with her. They wouldn't do it on HBO. They're not going to do it. Certainly not going to do it on Disney Plus. Wanda's going to, oh my God, it wasn't her fault after all. It's definitely, I would bet money that that's how it breaks.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's just interesting that you can be mid-season watching someone psychologically tortured by her, tears coming out of the other person's eyes. And then 3 minutes later in the episode, you're rooting for Wanda.
Yeah. This is why I guess the hope of Neuralink. Well, it was weird. You would think, oh, wow, Twitter's going to like help us care more about one another because we're going to get insight into other people's lives. But apparently it's not enough to really care for somebody, but to hate somebody. It takes 180 characters to hate someone and like hours of documentary footage to care about them.
Yep.
It's really, you can hate people with just one fact about them, but you need a lot more to like them. So hard tangent.
Sure.
New York Times. This is, I'm pretty down on, I shouldn't say the whole newspaper. I'm sure there's sections of it that I would go, yeah, cool. But they wrote an article about the guys of Slate Star Codex, who is now like Astral Codex. I don't know. I think it's called Slate Star Codex, Justin, if you don't mind. I think some people asked what it was actually called. I might have gotten the name wrong. But if you Google that, you should be in the right area.
You'll get there.
They did an article about him. I spoke about it last time. Mm-hmm. He didn't want them to release the name. They did. And it's a classic New York Times article. They did one on Joe Rogan that is all about the associations they can make to this person to make them bad.
Yeah.
It was just like, this is a bad guy. And one of the sections that I quoted is,
the Joe Rogan one is the one that Steven Crowder was upset by or something.
Joe Rogan just
had the images. Is this right? And like you scroll down and you see people's faces next to each other.
They just associated him with things that are bad. That was it. They rather than attack Joe, they just stand you next to people that are understood by their readership to be bad.
Yeah, they're like,
you know, Joe Rogan had a neo-Nazi on it. At one point said, yes, I agree with you. Like that's the type. This is exactly very similar to this quote.
Yeah.
So it's about the Slate Star Codex guy. And it says, in one post, he aligned himself with Charles Murray, and that's hyperlinked, who proposed a link between race and IQ in the bell curve. In another, he pointed out that Mr. Murray believes black people are genetically less intelligent than white people. Now, Charles Murray is an interesting example of somebody who's been like, I think in my understanding is people treat him as racist without reviewing his work and mm-hmm. being interested in it. It is a question that one should be able to ask and at least attempt to answer sincerely. Is okay, if there are there different heights between people of different races? Are there different, we have done this, penis sizes? Does Durex need to make different penis or different condom sizes when they're selling to African nations versus when they sell to Asian nations or the United States of America?
Like, yeah, what Charles Murray did is he looked at IQ across race.
Yes, and to be clear, you can't do this independent of socioeconomics. Like, all these things need to be accounted for.
I don't think that the report shows anything genetic.
His?
Yeah.
I haven't read a ton about Charles. I think it does.
No, I'm saying I don't think it does.
Oh, you're saying that you don't buy the conclusion that it does.
I don't know what the conclusion is, but I think the work pre the conclusion is just taking cohorts of race mm-hmm. and looking at their mean IQs.
Yes. So in any event,
that's work that seems like should be non-controversial. Now, if his conclusion is genetics, I think you got to take into account nutrition and amount of trauma during childhood. And there's mm-hmm. a lot of things that could skew that. But I think that potentially that could lead to a really great question, which is if one race is lower, why?
And what do we do about it? Yeah, yeah.
Is there a way we can fix this such mm-hmm. that we give people a better chance to succeed because we're focusing on nutrition from 0 to 10? You know what I mean? Yeah. Versus if you don't allow the study, you can't.
Or discussion about it in any event.
You can't fix the potential problem.
So that's Charles Murray. But for the purposes of this discussion, let's just pretend that he's a no good, very bad, very bad. Okay. So let's say in one post, he aligned himself with a no good, very bad, who proposed a no good, very bad. In another, he pointed out that the no good, very bad believes a no good, very bad. And the point is, I clicked the hyperlink and
he doesn't say anything.
Dude, he says, on this, I agree with him, which is to say, like, if Hitler liked dogs I say, I agree with Hitler there. The New York Times.
Well, funny is
in all of their, we'll write that paragraph.
What's funny is in an article, you could even be being facetious or going for humor. Like, you know, Adolf Hitler.
Oh, dude, he made a joke.
Dude, he wanted to kill all the Jews. He wanted to kill all of the, you know, Romanian people. He wanted to do this. And he loved dogs. And in the latter, I can at least agree.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, now you can take that out of context. Yes. But maybe my writing style is one that is tongue in cheek.
Yes.
So wow, and by the way, completely shitting on the racist parts of Hitler's stuff.
So he makes a hyperbole. He compares feminists to something hyperbolic, I forget, to Nazis or something. And it's like the end, it's the end of a paragraph, and it's his style is it's engaging. And they said, and one, he compared feminists to Nazis, and I clicked the hyperlink there and I went to it, and on his thing, he has it struck out. It says, I totally don't do this. Please don't take this out of context and post it all over the internet. Thanks. And it's just like, it was one errant thing, and I really do want to talk to these authors who do this stuff and be like, tell me what you think you're doing mm-hmm. when you do this. You believe that you've, what are you conveying? Is that what you mean to convey?
Well, my guess would be you don't start with like, what's the most true way to represent this person? You start with, this is a bad person and I need to make sure people know they're bad. Now let's write a story that I know if people read it, they won't like this guy. And mm-hmm. what is that going to do? It's going to prevent people from finding his bad work. Mm-hmm. It's an ends justifies the means thing. It's like, perhaps, am I painting a full picture? That's just my guess. Am I painting a full picture of this guy? Absolutely not. But what my goal is not to accurately represent him. It's to make it so that people who have never heard of him know that he's bad, don't go to him if they find him later, and poo-poo people who bring him up. And so then I start.
I would have to talk to this person to know. That's my guess. Makes sense. But I think where I actually really stand is I wouldn't even bet on that because I don't know, man. I generally believe that almost everyone is sincere. Like, and so
I think that is sincere.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a bad man. And this article is going to stop people from finding this bad man. And I sincerely think I'm doing good in the world.
I think few people are ends justify means people. I think that most people would say that they... Am I wrong on that?
I think most people are ends justifying.
Am I wrong on that one?
Anyone who tells a white lie is an end justifies the means person.
Oh, what do they say about that? I guess I would.
I'm going to take.
They don't admit that what they're doing is wrong.
I'm going to take off work today. Well, what am I going to do? I'm going to say I'm sick. Mm. Why don't you just say that you want to take off work to surf? Well, because then they'll dislike me. My boss will look down on me.
Yeah.
This is the truth. You're going to take off work to surf. Yeah, but if I tell him I'm sick, I get to go surf.
I got it.
And my boss won't think less of me, so I can still get the promotion.
Got it.
That's so, ends justifies
sorry,
the means.
Sorry. People don't, I think. Very few people will say the words, the ends justify the means, but they will describe the ends justifying
the means. That straight up ends justifies the means.
Yes, yes.
And I think that's what these authors are.
Okay.
This is a bad guy and I'm helping the world. I'm going to get there by writing this article. They're not going to say I'm going to get there by doing a lying hit piece.
Yes. Interesting. yeah, I need to hang out with some more people. I get that. Yeah, I think I missed that in people, but I don't think that you're wrong. Oh, and this is one that we just talked about. Lawyers. You're a lawyer. This isn't not necessarily about you. This is about incentives.
This isn't about every lawyer.
This is about incentives.
This is about incentives.
We had a lawyer write us
go
up.
Go vague on this.
Okay. We write us up a operating agreement. Can I say that?
Sure.
Okay. Because we don't have one, basically. Mm. We've just been buddies.
We have an old school operating agreement that I wrote for LegalZoom.
And it was intended as just like, look, fringe things. I trust Ben.
There's
three issues touches
that
me.
We're worried about. Yeah. X, Y, and Z. Here's how it happened.
Yeah.
Hey, can you just write us? We literally just want a contract.
A one pager.
So it says X, Y, and Z. It says if we get married, we got to do this. Not to each other. If we marry someone, we got to protect our equity in the business. If one of us dies, here's what happens. If somebody becomes blah, blah, blah. Can we just get like a one-page contract with the right legalese? Because I think if I type it up in a Word document, maybe I won't know the legal language to make this an official contract. So that's how it started.
And then they said, yeah, let's get on call. And I said, I don't want to be on call. And Ben said, you have to be on call. You got it. Okay. So I'm going, okay, already I don't want to be on call. This is fine. They gave you a number.
Sorry. I said you have to be on call because they work for the business. They don't work for either of us. And so they're.
So I was like, I'll be there.
They can't do their job unless we're both on there representing ourselves.
I'm going to tune this out. And I just. So and did they quote you a price at that point?
Yeah, like $4,000 or $5,000.
Okay, so they quoted you four or five. We get on call.
$4,000 or $5,000.
Sure. The first 10 minutes are chit chat, get to know you, da 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 da, hey, whatever. Okay, and that's like fine on the, you know. And then we talk and I say repeatedly, here's what I need, here's what I need, here's what I need. I don't care, I don't care, I don't care. Mm-hmm. You can infer my stance on anything outside of X, Y, and Z. It's an I don't care.
Yeah.
So don't include it. I don't care. Well, you're going to want it. You're going to need it. Like, so my sense of the call was it took an hour and a half or something. And I was like, that was a total waste of time. Mm-hmm. Didn't need the chit chat, but fine. And then I think I effectively or should have effectively communicated my position in about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But that was a waste of time. Fine. We get this thing weeks later back. It's a 60-page document and we are billed $6,000 for it. Which I realized today includes the chit chat that I didn't want to be part of and all of the part that I didn't want to be part of. And this is a person who I do not think is trying to hurt us at all. Like, this is not someone who wishes us ill.
They're agnostic to if this hurt us.
Yes. And so they quoted us a price that wound up being like, 20 to 50%, 20 to something-ish percent below what they actually wound up billing us for. Wasted our time. Mm-hmm. Gave us something that we don't want that is over bloated.
Yeah. And what's the incentive?
And
because you said this is about incentive.
And this is about incentive. So this isn't about lawyers. This is that the incentive for this person is to be paid by the hour. Mm-hmm. If they were paid as I said at the beginning of this, look, okay, $4,000 or $5,000, fine. We're going to pay you $4,000 or $5,000 for the result.
Final contract.
For the result.
Yeah.
You think we would have been on the phone for an hour and a half?
I do not.
Would we have chit-chatted about some nonsense?
I don't think we would.
Would they have insisted on 60 pages?
Probably not.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
And so I've seen this in life and in business.
They also said it took 10 hours to write, despite the fact that it's incredibly boilerplate.
I'm disgusted, honestly.
Ten hours.
I feel it's like in the scale of business, it's okay. But I feel violated by this in terms of business, as far as business violations can go. Because it's just like, wow, man, you hosed me. You wasted my time. You ripped me off.
Yep.
And you...
It could have been a one-pager for $500.
You acted like I took your time. And like I'm paying you. Like my feeling is you should have paid me for that time. I didn't want you to have
super
it.
Super valuable lesson in general.
Oh,
on hourly work.
Money that I think will be well spent for us to learn. And there's times where you want to pay, to be clear, there's times where you want hourly work as well, which is when you don't want someone to rush something and you're like, look, take the time necessary because I trust your judicious use of this time.
Well, the best thing that we've done that I do like in general is there's been times where someone's let's say hourly, we say, okay, how many hours do you think this will take? They go, okay, 20 hours. Okay, what do you want to be paid an hour? $50 an hour. I'm like, okay, we're gonna pay you 50% more than what you just quoted, and then that's the cap.
Yeah.
So I've given you plenty of time by your buffer, but what I am not paying for is scope creep.
Yeah.
Because that's the problem with an hourly thing is that someone will then just take a really long time.
Yep.
So it's like, okay, congrats. If your predictions are accurate, you will make 50% more than you expected. If you just lied to me to make sure you win the bid by underselling how hard this is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And someone else was honest, by the way, at the same hourly rate, but they said it was going to take twice as many hours because they're not lying to me. Well, now you will actually make 50% less than you were expecting. And then they won't take the deal and you'll go, okay, cool, great. You lied to me when you quoted me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great lesson. I tried it because we've had many of these multi-thousand dollar lessons in our business. One day we should just read them to you guys. I've got many of them. Like we've paid for our education.
Don't sign long-term contracts.
Yeah, we've talked about some of them. But this is another one. And it's just, I think it's again, it's not to single out lawyers, but I will be hyper vigilant of lawyers because I understand. And I worked as a consultant where it's an hourly.
I think the person most likely to be guilty of this is a high per hour, paid per hour person. And lawyers are almost always that.
Yeah.
And so for that reason, I will be especially skeptical of lawyers. But if anyone else comes into play who's a multiple $100 per hour person,
tech stuff,
I'll be equally skeptical.
It's often not that expensive. Yeah,
yeah, they're a sixth of the price, dude.
I'll end it here. But this is the most useless high cost thing that we've done in our business.
Yeah.
It's single-handedly. It's not the worst mistake we've ever made. But in terms of like, wow, you charged me so much money and took
so much of my time.
Took my time and did so little for me. This takes the cake.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
It's a real treat. It's a real treat.
But to be clear, I the business is great. I can't complain. It's a wonderful
thing. No, it's just a good lesson.
It's a good lesson.
All right, be super skeptical of that kind of thing.
Sure. Let's do questions unless you have anything else.
Nothing that can't wait for the next week.
Okay. Well, we got Justin.
First up is recently I think about people I've heard in the past because I didn't know better or for whatever reason I said or did the wrong things. And some of those people stayed in my life. Some I don't know what was of those situations, but I know I hurt them. And in general, I have practically not been called out for any of those things, but now I feel like I'd like to sit down with them and apologize to them. I also think I'd like others who hurt me to sit down with me and apologize to me. I'm curious if you've ever been in a situation like that and what are your thoughts about this and if I should go through with it.
So like preemptively apologizing for something that they feel that they've done wrong.
So that maybe they've done something.
Before they've been called to task.
Or before, kind of, it's that they've done something wrong in the past and they feel like they should apologize for it, but nobody's kind of called them out.
Okay.
I would treat these completely separately.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would treat the, I feel like I've done something wrong that warrants an apology, but I haven't been called for an apology. Completely separately from someone has done me wrong and I think they owe me an apology. For the first one, yeah, fire away would be my thing. This is a friend that you genuinely feel you've done wrong to and they might be harboring resentment towards you or not, but you don't know because you've never spoken about it. Sit them down and apologize. Seems like a great idea.
Mm-hmm. And?
Oh, I mean, that's just completely different from demanding an apology, which I would have to think through. I can think through it now, but the first one seems like a definite
go
yes.
Ahead. Yeah.
And that is not me saying it's a definite yes that you can demand an apology from someone who... I think what you can always do is share your feelings. So to demand an apology seems a step too far. But what you can do is if someone in your friend group did something that still sits with you today, is you can go, hey, this might seem out of nowhere, but a year ago you said something and I carry resentment with me to this day because of it, and I wanted to share because I think our friendship will be better off because I share it. That seems fine. Mm-hmm. And I think we've said this before, talk about facts and feelings. You said this.
Yeah.
It made me feel this. I'm not saying you were a dick. I'm not saying you were blah. I'm not labeling you. I just say, you said this thing. I've resented it till this day. I'd love to get this thorn out of our friendship.
Yeah.
Makes me want to see you less or whatever the truth is.
You are making an interesting distinction, which I don't think is good, between asking for an apology and sharing the resentment.
I do not think you can demand an apology.
Okay. Yeah. I think that
what
you can do is unload your burden that you are having. And they may or may not
your
apologize.
Feelings.
Yeah.
Yep. I wouldn't even say it that I think you should apologize is a step too far in my opinion.
Really? You can't say there can't be a feeling that one has. Like I find myself waiting for an apology.
That's different. Yeah.
Okay.
That's
a good point. I find myself waiting and it makes me feel X.
How about this? And the fact that you never apologized hurt me even more.
Yeah.
Because I thought that it was obvious from my reaction.
Got it.
That I was hurt.
No shoulds though.
Facts and my own feelings. No, nothing prescriptive for them. Mm-hmm. I think you might get an apology, but to go in and sit down and say, hey, a year ago you did, here's the worst thing you could do, label and demand an apology. Hey, a year ago you said something that was fucked up and I demand an apology. That's not going to go well.
Yeah.
What will go much better is, hey,
even if you said, I would like an apology, it's
you,
still like
you said or did this thing that is irrefutable. We both agree. You said or did. It made me feel like this in the moment. It's made me feel like this since. And then if it's true, and the fact that you didn't apologize, that was actually what hurt my feelings the most.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
It's going to get you a good reaction. It's the other thing. It's just the better way to go about it.
Yeah. Yep. 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 I like it.
Okay.
Would you recommend they do it like at the same time if it's...
Are these the same person?
Just in case.
Let's say it's the same person. They feel that they've wronged them, but they've also...
It seems like you're doing a little tit for tat. You're like, hey, I'm going to go back in our history and I'm going to apologize to you to lay up this reciprocity thing where you apologize to me.
I think if you call that out, you can get around it. If you treat it as a, like, hey man, there's some stuff that I've been holding back.
Sure.
And
that's a way to go about it.
I think you should proactively be like, this isn't a tit for tat, but there's two things. One where like, I think I did you wrong and I am sorry for that.
And I feel resentment and I feel hurt
about this. And I've been waiting for that apology and I'm angry that it never came and it makes me feel X, Y, and Z.
That could work. But I think if you don't call out, it looks particularly manipulative to come down and say, hey, there's this thing that I did.
Is there anything you want to say to me?
6 years ago, I spilled some milk on you and I felt bad ever since. Also, last week,
you slept with my girlfriend.
And it's been making me, it's like, yeah, just.
It's funny that we thought of the same thing. Yeah. It's never happened. Also, I was going to say, before we go to the next question, Patreon, thank you guys. We're doing it. Our Jordan Belfort clips are not going to carry the channel's revenue any further. So we are back to relying on Patreon, but it's been super helpful. And if you want to see more questions like this, we go for, I don't know, a considerable amount of time.
Probably go for an extra hour today.
Yeah. So if you want to join Patreon, any level gets you in. You can check out all those questions and it helps support the podcast.
Also, I think we came up with a new Patreon perk too, which is you get the audio ad free, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to put the audio behind Patreon. That. So if you want to get just the content, because we have a patron, he's a $300 patron and a friend of ours. And he's like, can I get out of the ads since I give you guys $300?
I didn't even know there were audio ads.
Yes, you can.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's another Patreon perk we just added in addition to getting your questions answered.
Click the link below. Thanks, guys. Next question.
Next is, I'm looking for recommendations of other podcasts similar to yours. Any suggestions?
Similar to ours. I would say like Brett Weinstein at Dark Horse does a pretty heady analysis of things. I think the Weinsteins do. I'm like, we're not identical to anybody. Weinsteins do, both of them, heady analysis of stuff and introduce you to new ideas. I do think like Slate Star Codex, who I mentioned, is really good. That's a blog though. The Last Psychiatrist is a blog that hasn't been written in for 7 years at this point, but is like a really interesting fountain of novel ideas that inform the way that I see the world. I don't agree with everything, but I'm the most interested in new ideas that I don't hear echoed. And that's a great spot.
Psychiatrist has also been shouted out by other people, right?
Yeah. Tucker Max called him out. The guy who started Cracked. He has like internet influence. He's like the Socrates
thought leader of public thought leaders.
Not all of them, but yeah, he kind of like started.
He's behind the scenes. His readership isn't necessarily huge, but
yeah,
people.
But he stopped 7 years ago. I think Slate Star Codex.
Didn't he say he stopped because he saw his anonymity was going to get threatened?
I think so. I think it is threatened. I mean,
no, but I believe I could be totally wrong. I thought that you guys had said that he basically saw the writing on the wall in terms of cancel culture and was like, I'm getting out of here.
I don't know if that was why. It might be because he's a psychiatrist and they don't like to, they hide their identities and his leaked and I know his name because I'm a psycho. And I was like, I need to contact him. So he writes again. I was like, maybe I shouldn't do that.
Yeah. I'm going to dox him. So he writes again.
I'm not going to dox him. No, I just want to just call him at home and be like,
hi, is Mr. Last Psychiatrist there?
Hi, I'm a reader. I noticed you haven't updated in 7.5 years.
Yeah. You probably maybe like moved on with your life, but I was wondering if you could.
Yeah. I would love it if he started writing again. But those are some good ones. Do you have any?
Podcast wise, I used to listen to the Tim Ferriss show a lot, but I kind of just fatigued of it. I don't know why.
It's great. It's too success oriented. It's too succeed. I just don't care as much about success anymore. Yeah. I like some of his stuff.
I liked his one on trauma.
I like his trauma stuff. Yeah. And that's not a knock. He sometimes, when he talked about his own, I was like, fucking dope, man. And I listened to that, but yeah, I don't know. I don't want to get more stuff done harder, faster.
Yeah. That was the podcast that I listened to the most. And then I used to listen to the Fighter and Kid, but now there's no Fighter and the Kid.
Now so there's none.
I don't listen.
Cool.
Next and last is, what's your take on Bill Maher? I've heard you talk about the news and I've come to agree with so much of what you said about it. But Bill, in my opinion, seems to be the one who's more concerned about truth than playing a side, even though he's clearly a Democrat. So I'm sort of on the fence, but I appreciate his takes and was wondering your take on him.
I have no take on him. I've heard or read things about him that are quite bad. I have never consumed any of his content first person, so I don't know if those bad things are true, mm-hmm. but I certainly can't endorse him either.
Yeah, no, I can neither endorse. I enjoy some of the videos that I see with him in them. Every take I have is so surface level of
him. That's how I feel.
Would be that, so almost as to say nothing, but I've got nothing against him. He did an interview with Howard Stern that I used in the upcoming video, and really, like, Howard just was amazing. And it's not to say that Bill isn't a good interviewer or anything, but I was like, dude, Howard Stern is a fucking titan. Mm-hmm. He just took this thing over. He does it with every host where he comes on. It's just his show as soon as he comes on. It's truly impressive. So Howard's going to be heavily featured in the next breakdown. And
when's that come out? 8 days? I'm excited to watch that one.
It's okay. You know, don't get too crazy.
No. there's thing. I think Howard Stern, I think that he's not perfect, and also that there's very interesting things to learn from him.
Yeah.
More so than, I think it's just unique. He's so unique.
Yeah. Well, I could tell you, what we do, the process of making these videos is you start with an idea or a person, and then you have to fit it into a title that is of interest to the audience. Mm-hmm. So there's interesting things about Howard Stern that will not make the video.
Yeah, but you can make a set. That's what I did with Joe Rogan is I mm-hmm. took all my clips for Joe Rogan, and then we said, oh yeah, what do we want this to be about? We want it to be about commanding respect or something. So I went, I have so much about making a conversation good that has nothing to do with respect. I'm not going to include it. And then it did really well. And so 4 months later, I said, guys, what about a small talk video about Joe Rogan? And then I used all the other stuff I thought was good. Mm-hmm. And so, I probably still have more.
Well, so that Joe Rogan is also a super interesting person. With Howard Stern, this video, those of you interested in the behind the scenes, it started as I was like, Howard Stern's one of the greatest interviewers of all time. Mm-hmm. I can't even list them, but he has so many breaking news. Somebody comes out as gay or shares that they were abused. He's almost, you know, he and Oprah are neck and neck for like people just going on like,
different styles.
Why did I say that? Oprah, I think they feel a little bit better after. I think they walk out of his studio, they're like, oh shit.
Yeah, yeah.
So he has a way of really getting people to open up. And it can be summarized quickly as one, he talks about everything, like size of his penis, that, his sex life, all this kind of stuff. So you just go into an environment where
he says he has a small penis, yes. right? Which I think is important because it's if you're like, oh yeah, you guys want to know a fun fact about me, I have a 9-inch penis. Yeah. Wow, this is really making me want to open up to you, Howard.
Yes. He talks about his insecurities, his failings, etc. He directly asks who did it. And he also has a habit of, it's overdone because he interrupts guests sometimes, but he assumes, this is in the video, that people are more petty, insecure, jealous, angry, frustrated, whatever, than we all let on because he's been to therapy. Mm-hmm. And so when he's talking to John McCartney and he's talking about, or Paul McCartney, he's talking about John Lennon, he's like, it must have pissed you off so much that he got all the attention. I would have been livid. I'd have been, and people sometimes say no, and you can tell they don't totally mean it, but sometimes go, well, yeah, you know, it was frustrating that John got all the, you know, and he gets good stuff by just like not judging and being like, because I'd be furious in that situation. You know, he walks out, he brings this chick into the studio, and all of a sudden she breaks up the greatest band of all time. Like, it's he's got a way of
paces and leads.
Yes.
He meets you in your reality, then he says what you're scared to say.
And he doesn't judge it.
He's saying it's okay to say it, though. He's saying
and he puts it, I would. He's like, I'd kill him. If somebody did that, like, I know that I would. And all of a sudden, like, well, you walk away being like, I just said that I hate John Lennon. Oh, why did I do that? And it's not actually what
he says. He says that they forgave each other before.
He said they forgave each other, but he does go, yeah, John broke up the band. He'd always been vague, I believe, up until then. And Howard asked, he was like, oh, it's John. John broke us up. So he's got a bunch of those and he's very good at it. But there's a separate thing that I did not include in the video, which is how he takes over conversations. I focused more on how to go from small talk to opening up talk. But he also goes on Bill Maher and just rules this show.
But you're saying Howard Stern's face, which I think is fair, might not resonate with the audience well or do well. But if this first video does well, it's about Howard Stern and Joe Rogan.
Yes.
You could do a second one about Howard Stern and Chris Evans.
Yes. You know? So I had, so those of you will see, this is the, this is how the sausage is made. I was going to do this Howard Stern video. It's solid. It's good. And then I thought, oh my gosh, Howard Stern's face in 2021 on a thumbnail is going to just be
bomb.
A waste of the, all the effort that I put into this. Yeah. So I needed, I was like, who else can I include to support these points? Joe Rogan, very popular.
So wait, so just to be clear, the thought process was, here's the title I want. Who else fits this title?
And who else fits these points?
Yeah.
And I was like, and so I was like, and some of them, Joe has great examples, but quite frankly, Joe can't do it like Howard does. Mm-hmm. Like there's some where I was like, I cannot find, and I know I won't, Joe doing what Howard does here.
Oh yeah, but I'm just saying,
where Howard says he has a small penis. Like Joe's not gonna.
But you could make a how to take over a room video that was Howard Stern and Craig Ferguson.
Yes. Yes.
And it would do very well, and you could showcase Howard.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cool.
So I think there's a second video. If there's good content, there's a second video there, I think.
Yep.
Dope. That's all I had for today.
Okay, great.
Good, we got more on Patreon if you guys want to join. Link is in the podcast links, notes, and the description. We would love to have you. It means a lot to us, our continued existence. So hope to see you guys there. Thanks to all of you who are in Patreon. And for those of you, we're going to hop over now to that. Peace.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.